Good afternoon, and thank you for joining TI's fourth quarter mid-quarter financial update. In a moment, I will provide a short summary of TI's current expectations for the quarter, updating the revenue and EPS estimate ranges for the company. In general, I will not provide detailed information on revenue trends by segments or end markets, and I will not address details of profit margins. In our earnings release at the end of the quarter, we will provide this information. As usual with our mid-quarter update, we will not be taking follow-up calls this evening. Considering the limited information available at this point in the quarter, and in consideration of everyone's time, we will limit this call to 30 minutes. For any of you who missed the release, you can find it on our website at ti.com/IR. This call is broadcast live over the web and can be accessed through TI's website. A replay will be available through the web. This call will include forward-looking statements that involve risk factors that could cause TI's results to differ materially from management's current expectations. We encourage you to review the safe harbor statement contained in the news release published today, as well as TI's most recent SEC filings for a complete description. We have revised our expected range for TI's revenue to the upper half of our previous range. We now expect TI revenue between $2.90 and $3.02 billion. This is a range of sequential growth of 1% to 5%. As a reminder, our calculated revenue will seasonally decline about $120 million from the third quarter. Our semiconductor revenue is expected to increase in a range of 5% to 10% sequentially. Once again, we expect analog to be the biggest driver of sequential growth. We expect earnings per share between 47 cents and 51 cents. For comparison, EPS was 42 cents in the prior quarter and 8 cents in the year-ago quarter. Operator, you can now open the lines for questions. In order to provide as many of you as possible the opportunity to ask a question, please limit yourself to a single question. I will provide you the opportunity to ask a follow-up question. Operator?
Thank you, Mr. Slammaker. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have any questions or comments, simply press star 1. Just a quick note, if you are joining us this afternoon using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, star 1, please. We go first to Jim Covello with Goldman Sachs.
Imran, thanks so much for taking the question. I wonder if you could give us any update on any of the lead time issues or shortages that you had previously been experiencing.
Okay. Jim, I guess, you know, those are certainly intertwined there. I will reiterate probably what we've said similarly over the last quarter or so, which is, you know, if you consider the rapid and really unprecedented sequential increases we've seen in demand over the past few quarters, demand does continue to lead our supply of components. So we're working to address bottlenecks in our operations, but supply definitely remains constrained currently. Specific to lead times, again, I would say our operations have done exceptionally well in responding to the increase in demand, but nonetheless, as demand has outstripped supply, lead times for our products have generally moved out. We're working hard to resolve it, but that remains the situation today. And they moved out really fourth quarter compared to third quarter. Do you have a follow-on, Jim?
Yeah, I mean, just related to that as a follow-up, have you lost any business that you think you won't be able to get back, or do you think the customers will just stick with you and come back in next quarter?
Well, I think when you talk about near-term business, you know, most of what we sell our differentiated products, and you know, customers generally don't just move in and out from supplier to supplier on those types of products. You know, it's possible in some cases that customers literally could have different board designs that comprehend different components, but generally I would say that's not the case. The other thing I would say is that I think our lead times and, you know, the pressures that the rapid increase in demand have placed on us are not dissimilar from what many of our competitors are seeing as well. So I don't know exactly where their lead times would be, but customers frequently tell us we're not their only issue in terms of availability of components, and in many cases we're not their biggest issue. So, okay, Jim, thanks for those questions, and let's move on to the next caller, please.
Move on now to Chris Bamley with J.P. Morgan.
Thanks, Ron. Now that we're in the, I think it's the third quarter in a row for above seasonal performance, can you just talk about Q1 visibility, and can we see Q1 be above seasonal too?
Chris, as you're probably aware, at this point, being a mid-quarter update, we're really focused on the current quarter, and it's our practice really not to try to move out and have a lot of discussion on the out quarter. So I will abide by that. And, of course, you know, we'll have more to say about first quarter expectations in January when we report. Jeff, final one?
Yes, actually a follow-up to James's question earlier. Do you guys have any idea of when you think these lead times can come in?
You know, I wish I had a clear answer to that, but I guess what I would say is that, you know, we added, you know, as you'll recall, we said previously that our operational constraints are really in the back end of our operations, so more the assembly test area as opposed to the wafer fab areas. And we added assembly test capacity last quarter, and we plan to continue to add capacity over the next couple of quarters. So, you know, as we go along with that process, we'll assess demand trends, but, you know, we certainly understand the timeline of our capacity plan, but the specific demand trends over that time period certainly are less predictable as they've been over the last couple of quarters. So, with that, I don't have a specific date at which we would expect to be caught up. Okay, do you have a? Can we move on to the next caller, please, operator?
We're next now to Uche Orje with UBS.
Ron, hi. Thank you very much. Two questions. One is on the gross margin trend within this guidance. With calculators coming down and analog rising in the mix. You know, can you give us any idea as to how directionally gross margin should move for the current quarter?
I think, you know, if you have time to kind of work through the model, and it'll depend upon where we land within that range, but, you know, I guess if you're looking to the middle or the top end of that range, you probably will calculate, you know, some continued increase in gross margin. Probably not as extensive as you've seen over the last couple of quarters, but it should continue to move up toward higher levels this quarter. Yeah, follow on, Uche?
Sure, I do. If I look within the analog business, any comments you can make as to this split of high volume versus high performance? And the reason I ask is a lot of the industrial exposed companies recently have, you know, raised the outlook significantly. If you look at the FPGA guys who have both industrial and com equipment, you know, so any sense as to how we should think about HVA versus HPA at this point?
Sure. I think if you look inside analog, really as we've seen over the last couple of quarters, we're seeing solid growth once again in fourth quarter across all three of the major product lines, meaning high-performance analog, the power products, as well as the high-volume analog area. You know, when you look at it from a market perspective, I would say the growth is pretty diverse. It includes automotive growth, consumer, some of the storage products that we're selling into, you know, for computing applications or hard disk drive applications, as well as industrial. And, you know, just speaking more generally about industrial, you know, beyond just analog, you'll recall, I think last quarter was really the first quarter where we saw some of the high volume areas be complemented by growth in industrial as well. And I guess it's encouraging that we're seeing that industrial growth continue into this current quarter as well. Okay, Uche, and I believe that was your follow-up question, so let's move to the next caller, please.
Next now to John Barton with Cowen.
Thanks, Ron. I wonder if you could comment on the very recent trends, you know, particularly post-Thanksgiving weekend. Any comments you can make with respect to backlog, booking trends, et cetera?
Oh, John, I really don't have it down from a week-by-week perspective or anything that that reflects, you know, kind of a post-Thanksgiving type detail. But what I would say, just in general, October and November were both strong months. You know, in terms of the guidance that we're providing, you know, we're not sitting here relying on an exceptionally strong December to meet our guidance, but, you know, we also see no reason to believe, based on anything we've seen at this point, that December would be exceptionally weak either. Do you have a final one, John?
Yeah, the guidance for EPS, that includes 1 cent of restructuring charge still, or?
That is the assumption. I really don't have an update for you on restructuring charges, but the guidance that we had provided back in October was 1 cent. You are correct on that. Okay, John, thank you for your questions. And operator, next caller, please.
We're next down to Stacy Raskin with Sanford Bernstein.
Hi, Ron. Thanks for taking my question.
Sure.
Top range of your revenue range didn't move, but the top of your EPS did. I'm just wondering, are there any other EPS drivers in there that are different from where you were in Q3?
I don't know that they're different from where we were in Q3, but, you know, as you might imagine, there's, you know, there's certainly multiple factors inside EPS that are at work. You know, of course, the higher revenue is a factor. In addition to that, you know, expectations for higher factory utilization are playing out in Q4. And then, you know, I guess the final area I would mention is that mix continues to benefit us. You know, for example, as, you know, I mentioned already, analog from a product perspective continues to lead our growth. And, you know, analog profitability, as you know, does quite well. So those are probably, you know, the multiple factors that are coming in as to why EPS is, you know, doing a little bit better in terms of growth of EPS, even, I should say, even better than the revenue growth. Do you have a follow-up, Stacey?
Yeah, I do. And to follow up with that and on the gross margin question then, so if mix is now maybe a slightly better factor than you thought it was at the end of Q3, does that actually imply that, I know you said gross margins even back then were going to be up a little bit, does that imply that your outlook for gross margins for this quarter now are maybe a little more incrementally positive than they were after your Q3 report?
Yeah, that's probably, you know, again, depending upon where you are in the range of EPS that we provided, but, you know, the reason EPS moved up a little better than the revenue range is really reflective of gross margin. Okay, Stacey, thank you for your questions. Let's move to the next caller.
Next now to Ramesh Misra with Brigantine Advisors.
Good afternoon, Ron. Thanks for taking my question. In terms of your stretching lead times, would that mean that your pricing is relatively more stable even in the high-volume analog parts?
Ramesh, for most of our differentiated products, you know, the near-term environment really doesn't impact pricing. So, for example, in a lot of the high-volume type product areas where we may be sole source or providing a custom product, typically we have longer-term price agreements with those customers. So, again, I would encourage you not to think about pricing for most of our product areas moving around with a near-term environment. For the small part of our portfolio, however, that is commodity, and again, you know, I always want to quantify this is, you know, less than 5% of our revenue that I'm describing, prices are, in fact, moving up. So, you know, for that small part, pricing is beneficial. Jeff, follow on, Ramesh?
Very quick one. Any read on whether this demand is from your customers is more inventory refill versus actual end demand, or any read on the end demand for your customers itself?
Yeah, we don't have direct visibility into, let me call it, in consumption. What I can say is that our customers are increasing their production levels, and that's what's driving their higher demand on TI. in terms of what they might be doing from an inventory perspective. And I would say overall we believe inventory continues to be lean. Specific to our distribution channels, you know, I would say inventory for the quarter could be up or down a little, really depending upon how the remainder of the quarter unfolds here. From an OEM or a contract manufacturer perspective, you know, certainly we have less visibility there, but again, we believe that inventories, even at those customers, are generally being well managed. Okay, Ramesh, thank you for your questions, and let's move to the next caller, please.
A question now from David Wu with GC Research.
Ron, the in your guidance initially for Q4, there was some caution that you factored in cancellations and other overbooking as your lead times went out in Q3. I guess from the current guidance, it suggests that the cancellations or any of these debookings never came through for you. Should I read that?
That's a good observation, David. I mean, I think you're, if I remember right, in Q3, we had a 1.08 book-to-bill, and
yes.
Yet our revenue guidance was, the middle of the range anyway, was something like 1%. So you're right, we're moving back a little more to reflect the full effect of the orders that we received in Q3. Now, also, I will say, just due to lead times, not all of those Q3 orders were for shipments in Q3 or even in Q4. Some of them were extended out into early next year. Specific to your question, you're exactly right. Cancellations are very normal. We are not seeing any signs of heightened cancellations at this point. Do you have a follow-up, David?
Yeah, follow-on is, since the lead times have gone out even further from the third quarter, should the caveats that you use for Q3 be applicable for Q1 of next year, which is seasonally a weaker quarter?
Caveats in what way?
I mean, in terms of possible cancellations and the book-to-bill being somewhat artificially high at this point.
So really kind of comes down to, are we seeing double ordering? And I guess I would just kind of restate what I said back in October that, we have no evidence of double ordering, but we wouldn't expect to. And so, we kind of rely on our experience. Our management team has worked through many of these cycles in the past, and we generally know what to expect as we kind of move through this type of upturn. So it is very important, that we work closely with our customers, make sure we're understanding, exactly what they need, when they need it, and then do our best to support it. And so that's the process we're going through here. And we'll continue to go through it as long as demand is as strong as it is. Okay, David, thank you for your questions, and we'll move to the next caller.
Our next question now from Sumeet Danda with Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Yes, hi, Ron. First question on the baseband business in the fourth quarter. Is it fair to assume that that's tracking to the low end of your semiconductor business, and has there been much impact from the ramp of a competitor at your largest customer in Q4, any visibility on that into Q1?
Okay. What I would say, first of all, is that your assumption is correct, that I think I said earlier that, or possibly not, that baseband we would expect to continue to decline as a percent of TI's total revenue. I probably did not say that before, so it could be up a little bit, but in general, we expect that it will not be growing at the same pace as our semiconductor business is overall sequentially. And in fact, your point about, are we feeling the impact of a competitor ramping at Nokia? To the extent that competitor ramps at all, it means that's product that we wouldn't be shipping that we would otherwise have been shipping. But at the same point, I would say that's really a very small factor at this point. Generally, the way new ramps like that work is a customer will provide a new supplier, you know, demand for a phone model or two. They're not going to all of a sudden move over to a very significant part of their product line. So we really don't expect that that will have a big impact on us for some period of time, even going forward. And what I would also note is that most of what we're shipping in wireless, even in basebands these days, and from a revenue perspective, really is centered up on 3G type of product. And I think it's still going to be some time before we have competitors positioned to support 3G demand at Nokia. So, and again, that's, you know, nothing in terms of end dates or anything like that moving out. We do expect that revenue to decline, and we expect it to be essentially gone by 2013. But you know, we'll see what it looks like between now and then as those various competitors try to ramp their new products. Okay, Sumit, did you have a follow-on question?
Yes, I did, Ron. You know, the lead time extension that you talked about, you noted that much of the bottleneck was in test and assembly, but are you concurrently also planning to continue to ramp utilizations into what's typically a seasonally weak Q1 to build die bank inventory too, or is that, or do you think you've done enough from a utilization ramp perspective into Q4 that that's not necessarily required?
Yeah, let me not try to project what we will do in Q1. Other than, you know, just making a couple of comments. First of all, we would like to build some inventory in Q4, but we've been somewhat limited in terms of being able to actually achieve that to any significant level, really due to this ongoing strong demand. So even in the current quarter, if we can build some inventory in the right areas, we will. And then the other thing is just keep in mind, due to manufacturing cycle times, a wafer started in the beginning of Q1 really is probably not shipping in terms of a product out the door until very late in Q1. So most of our utilization, or at least our average utilization in Q1, really would reflect planned shipments in Q2 as opposed to Q1. So in general, your utilization, your factory loadings, are leading demand by roughly a quarter. So again, seasonally down Q1 really refers probably more to our shipments as opposed to our utilization and our factory loading. Okay, Sumit, thank you for your questions, and we'll move to the next caller.
And we'll take that question now from Edward Snyder of Charter Equity Research.
Thanks a lot. You talk about lead time. So it's safe to assume, based on what you're saying here, that most of your inventory metrics, days of sales, days of cost and sales, which have been running up quite a bit lower than average, are probably going to remain such, at least through the fourth quarter, and then maybe we could catch up some of that in the first quarter if seasonality is normal, because you could probably catch up on some of your inventory then. Is that a fair assumption?
I'll just kind of repeat. I don't expect that you'll see a big inventory change from TI in Q4, although we would like to have more inventory coming on board probably than what we will actually achieve. And again, I'll reserve additional comment on Q1 until January. Jeff, following it?
The second one, in terms of the strength in your end markets, I mean, obviously analog, but it sounds like it's fairly broad-based, almost an economic recovery driving this, given how widely dispersed the markets and the products you're seeing growth outside of the wireless thing. Are you tracking any metrics overall to try and get an indication of where the end demand is coming from? Is it a recovery in the economy? Is it GDP? How far into it do you go, or is it just take the orders as they come and try to vet as best you can with the customer why orders are picking up?
Yeah, we probably read the same reports you guys do, and in terms of, you know, opinions about where the economy is going. So we really don't have anything unique or specific to TI to add to that. We do believe probably the best information source that we have is the dialogue that we have with customers in terms of what they're seeing and, you know, what they're expecting. And, you know, again, probably I would just kind of go back to something I said earlier. You know, our customers are ramping their production. And, you know, especially versus if you go back to second quarter, we really, the driver of growth there was just that, you know, we had come off of such a significant inventory reduction in Q1, just the fact that customers were reducing inventory at a slower rate in Q2 drove a lot of growth for TI. Going into Q3, we probably had some of that still going on, and in addition, we noted that we were starting to see customers ramp production. And then I would say current quarter, the customer production ramp is probably the biggest factor in terms of what we're seeing, although there probably still is some impact from just converging our shipment levels with the customer's production levels. So, okay, and I believe that was your follow-up, Ed, so let's move to the next caller, please.
The next question now from John Pitzer with Credit Suisse.
Yeah, Ron, thanks for taking my questions. A couple here. First, when you look at the analog business, peak to current, you guys are going to be down about 2-5% versus the peer group that's going to be down about 15%. Kind of curious, how much of that can be explained through different rev rec or market share? And if it's the latter, where do you think you're doing the best job on market share?
Market share, or what was the first option?
Revenue recognition policies.
Oh, I think revenue recognition policies are not a factor here at all. And the reason I say that is the only place where revenue recognition comes into play is with distribution, and we have been depleting inventory in distribution as opposed to building in inventory in distribution over the last several quarters, which says, if anything, that has been a headwind for us as opposed to a help. So, again, not at all on inventory recognition, which then leaves the option of market share gains, and, you know, we believe that, in fact, is what's happening. So, you know, we've talked for some period that our market share gains in high-performance analog and power analog products have been pretty significant and consistent probably over the last 5 years or so, but that, in fact, the underperformance in high-volume analog and logic had been hurting our share overall in analog. We were probably still gaining share, but certainly not to the extent that we were performing in HPA and power. Second quarter this year, we had HVAL contributing growth at or above the rates that power and high-performance analog were contributing. And I think that in and of itself is a big factor in terms of why we believe we're gaining market share. So again, what was a drag in analog has become a contributor at the same levels, and as a result, we're gaining market share probably in all three of those businesses compared to the peer group. Do you have a follow-on, John?
Yeah, Ron, just relative to the back-end capacity constraints, how long does it take to add back-end capacity? And given that you guys are still shipping below last cycle's peak, why is there a bottleneck there? Is this longer testing times, or what else is going on?
Let me answer the back part of your question first. It's mixed. So unit growth compared to, let's say, go back to third quarter 08, did not occur consistently across all package types. There are certain package types where growth was much more significant than others, which created the constraints for those particular package types. So it's mix related in terms of package type, and that's what drove some of those bottlenecks. We noted that if you even look at our capital expenditures, you'll see third quarter they were up compared to second quarter. That really reflects test equipment that was brought in-house in third quarter. So we've begun the process. And a lot of that was equipment, you know, probably we put on order back in second quarter time period. So we have the backlog in place with the testers. We have basically a pipeline of equipment that we will continue to bring in, probably through second half of 2010, based on what's out there today. And, you know, we'll, at that point, we would expect probably the move to slow down somewhat going into second half 10, but we'll make those decisions as we move forward. Okay, operator, we have time for one more caller, please.
Take that question now from Mr. Rainey for Jury with CLSA.
Thank you. Ron, you know, there's been a lot of talk about lead times. Can you help us quantify what your lead times are in normal times and where they are now?
I really can't because they are so, there's so much of a range there. So we, even today, we probably have some products that's available immediately, and then we have other products that that are much more significant in terms of lead times and our ability to supply those products. So in good times, I don't have a range for you on lead times, and I don't have one now either. Jeff, on stream?
Yeah, just a quick one. Do you anticipate any change to your CapEx plans going forward because of the tightness? Thank you.
Probably not at this point. We, first of all, I don't have an update for you, but I will note that in October, we had a significant change in our capital expenditure plan. We took CapEx from what previously was guidance for the year of $300 million up to $800 million. And I think we noted that our capital spending would probably remain elevated through first half of this year, first half of 2010, before it moved back down into, you know, what is probably a more normal range of call it 5 to 8% or so of revenue. We also noted that the elevated capital spending was really for two different considerations. One was the wafer fab equipment that we purchased through the Quimonda bankruptcy proceedings. For our RFAB wafer fab, and again, that's going to be a 300 millimeter analog wafer fab. That capital involves both the Quimonda equipment as well as maybe some additional equipment that we would need to put around it. And then finally, it also included the higher assembly test expenditures that I just noted that we would be doing, really focused on fixing near-term bottlenecks in terms of our capacity. Okay, and Srini, thank you for your questions. And before we end the call, let me remind you that the replay is available on our website. Thank you and good evening.